Well, I don't think much more of the media today than I have for the last 2 weeks. So I'm still encouraging you to write letters to the president. Call the media. Voice your complaints. And tell them you're tired of them being used as an instrument of propaganda by Saddam. And when are they going to quit deluding themselves that they are somehow neutral when one side of the equation at the worst is withholding information to protect our soldiers, but on when they do speak are telling the truth as best they know it, when they know that the other side is conceived and perpetrated in lie, and they know it's lie. Peter Arnett is in Iraq for only one reason, to give Saddam Hussein a worldwide propaganda window. And we're permeated with ex-generals, none of whom I ever heard very much about. You notice that most of these military experts and analysts are not well-known American heroes. I mean, how come, if they're so hot, none of them made it to the Joint Chief of Staff, the Chiefs of Staff? The war is reduced down to kid games, maps with little soldier toys being moved around on it, which cheapens the encounter. And now this maniac, this great and strong leader, this powerful soldier, best he can do is kill birds after he cripples them with oil. Kill fish. And foul up the environment. You notice the peaceniks got some real problems, because they're spawned by the same crowd. You know, they're screaming, peace, peace. But their faces are recognizable because they've been out there screaming for the environment. And this lying monster, do you know what the media, if they keep going the way they're going, the media will be reporting in a few weeks that all the Palestinians and so-called Saddam-supporting Arab countries are now saying that the reason Saddam went into Kuwait is because we bombed Baghdad. And they'll report it faithfully. If we hadn't gone and bombed them like we are, they never would have gone to Kuwait. And Kuwait's supposed to belong to Iraq because it was part of the Ottoman Empire. Well, so was Lebanon and Israel and Syria. So maybe, and all the coastal Arab states, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirate. So in a Freudian slip, he revealed his ambition. He wants to restore the Ottoman Empire. That means Turkey belongs to him too. If Kuwait belongs to him. And you know, the very same people out there screaming No war. Are the people who screamed violence was okay to bring down South Africa? And I'm consistent. I believe that apartheid was one of the greatest immoral acts fostered on humanity. I spent weeks teaching that the root problem in South Africa stems from the same kind of problem we're facing in Iraq. Religion fused with nationalism. The Dutch Reformed people felt they took their Bible and read it in the Old Testament everywhere they went. They felt that they were modern Israel moving into the Promised Land and that this was their land. And that the blacks that they found there were the Canaanites to be routed out with the same cruelty that is found in the Old Testament record of the possession of Canaan. And with those deep and abiding roots corrupted by Cecil Rhodes' work and moral and religious justifications given for their racism, should have been rooted out. And the resettlement procedure is a throwback to Sennacherib and the Assyrians, who lifted up the house of Israel and repopulated it on the border between modern Iraq and Iran, between Assyria and the Medes, and moved in other people to resettle northern Israel, which became the basis of the Samaritans. None of these things are new. Just be consistent in your screaming. Through the mid-1970s in Iraq, reading from Republic of Fear, the Army's principal function of internal repression was accentuated by a major escalation in the levels of violence directed at the Kurds from ancient Kurdistan, which took on the character of a racist war of extermination. One incident at the village of Dakhan in the province of Mosul on August 8, 1969, which gives you some idea what kind of a monster we're dealing with, was brought to the attention of the United Nations. 67 women and children were knowingly burnt alive in a cave where they had sought refuge from artillery shelling. And yet we have a major media for ratings hunger, planning one of their correspondents in the capital city of this miserable fascist dictatorship where thought is controlled from the center, from Saddam, so he can be their voice to complain about innocent women and children being killed. We've yet to have one of those dogs so-called mouthpieces for that inhumane, now animal, bird, wildfowl, fish, ecological environment killer of the Persian Gulf. They plant one of their so-called journalists there to be nothing but a mouthpiece for this lion regime. You know, a lot of people say, because there's so little known about Iraq, it's easy to say he gassed his own people. He didn't view the Kurds as his own people. I mean, I sympathize and have over the years with the minority, browns and blacks, applaud the progress that they have made by sticking together for civil rights causes in this country. I don't want to lose my respect because they do too much belly aching about the percentage of blacks and browns that volunteered for this army, if there's any place in the world where those that care about civil rights and are against racism, it ought to be on the front lines killing this miserable racist society. 67 women and children were knowingly burned alive in a cave where they had sought refuge from artillery shelling. They down in a cave to avoid artillery shelling. 67 women and children. The Iraqi army knew they were women and children and they had sought refuge there from artillery shelling. And they burned them alive because they were Kurds. The last phase of the Kurdish war, we've heard the part about them being gassed. There's a little more background to it. The last phase of the Kurdish war broke out in March 1974. In the first month, the towns of Zako, population 25,000, and Kalat Diza, 20,000, were razed to the ground. I mean, we have a network that will let a so-called journalist be there to be a picture taker and a mouthpiece of stage scenes. I mean, he thinks it's impressive to say he goes to a graveyard and there's 24 mounds in the graveyard. If Saddam can't go out and put mounds in a graveyard. For all we know, he buried chemical weapons there. Mounds don't prove bodies. And become a mouthpiece for them complaining to an onlooking world because a civilized world is beginning to see Iraq that they've ignored, by and large, down through the decades of this lifetime. And nobody in the media is telling them. The first month, the town of Zako, population 25,000, and Kala'al at Diza, 20,000, were razed to the ground. Planes napalmed and bombed Kurdish villages and districts systematically. Hundreds of thousands of Kurds fled the plains and their towns for refuge in the mountains, including teachers, workers, doctors, lawyers, school children, and whole families. Waves of arrests, deportations, summary executions. For instance, 5 Kurdish students at Baghdad University, assassinations, and public hangings, including 11 Kurdish dignitaries at Erbil. Immediately followed these events, immediately followed the outbreak of hostilities. Turkish news sources claim that up to 5,000 women, children, and men too old to fight died in the scramble to escape Iraqi Kurdistan, fleeing the military of Iraq. 1,000 Peshmerga fighters, prisoners of war, were shot down in cold blood after surrendering to government troops. Those are the kind of things that Nuremberg existed for. Those are the kind of things that the war crimes trials were after. Now we have to put up, you that are parents with your kids sitting in a living room, recognizing, as I pointed out last night, the dedicated purpose of Saddam Hussein to bend and invade the minds of the children and this hypocritical media now are staging programs telling the parents that got more sense than any media person you've seen yet how to handle your children during the television of this war. There have been outcries across this land against violence and other things that are portrayed at certain hours, and warnings run to keep your children from watching this. Yet this same hypocritical media in the hunt for scoops will let this country be assassinated, impressionable children's minds, by a carping puppet who has lost all reason to be called a journalist, who feeds into our living rooms this propaganda from Saddam, this hypocritical speech making about killing of innocent citizens, when this is just a scratch on the surface of the history of genocide practiced that pales what's gone on in South Africa and Hitler Germany, both of which I have little respect for. But I have less respect for Iraq, having learned from these totalitarian oppressive societies. They have set new records of evil in their march to power and in the elimination of any opposition. And then we have to sit with the media feeding hypocrisy into our homes, seeking to equate in the minds of our young people that there are two sides to this story. And I'll tell you, before very many days pass, you'll have the news media peddling the lies from Iraq that we're the ones that opened up the ruptures and the valves that put the oil in the Persian Gulf. Lying is their method. And to you that joined us this half hour, I'm still ranting and raving about having to be abused by those that have been granted a license in this nation as a public trust and continue to be the treasonous mouthpiece of Saddam Hussein's propaganda machine, giving aid and comfort to the enemy, giving free airtime to their terrorist voices, adding to the problems that our men and women who are over there fighting against this evil fascist empire. And I don't think we have to put up with it. So I'm just getting started tonight. But I want to hear Merle Haggard sing that song again. And you that have just joined us, if you're as mad as I am, get on the telephone. There are only two kinds of people. The Cathedral Chapel up in Berkeley figured this out. There are only two kinds of people in America today. The Bush patriots that support our people in the field and the Saddam scuds. Let me keep talking to you about the Kurdish war because I'm leading up to something. Reading from Republic of Fear. Ali Abbas was a Peshmerga, a soldier in Mustafa Barzani's army during the Kurdistan rebellion against the treatment they were receiving, their refusal to bow. Along with thousands of his comrades, he fled to Iran with the collapse of the revolt. He ended up in Isfahan as a hunting companion for Iranian officers. But the Kurdistanis love their land. I mean, we have the Palestinians talking about a homeland, and we have them trying to say that Iraq is fighting for its home. Well, why didn't it stay there instead of going into areas that were not their home? These Kurdistanis have a history of their mountainous section of the land that the English mandate and French mandate people, after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, began to divide up. It goes back many centuries, as do the Armenian people in the land of Turkey. And to these people in that area, those roots go deep. As the Jewish people would never give up on the land they felt God gave to Abraham and passed on by promise to Isaac. And these deep ancient roots in this land, because it goes clear back to the earliest people, the Sumerians. And Iraq straddles and includes both the areas of the ancient kingdom of Assyria and Chaldeans. And one of their earliest genocide movements was to annihilate the Assyrian Christians. The Kurdistanis, having been driven out, still had a kinship with their ancient homeland. So in Iran, he named his newborn daughter Ghariba, or stranger, or Ghariba. And when in August this year, the year this was written, the Iraqi government renewed its offer of an amnesty, he decided to return home. His and some 20 other families only just made it. He had a weary and hunted look about him as he crossed the border. He knew that the Iraqi government had been deporting shades of South Africa, had been deporting thousands of homecoming Kurds to the deep, exclusively Arab South. But as he told the official reception committee, the risk he deemed himself to be running was not just that. It was detention, torture, or even execution. Such, he said, were the fears of all the returnees. And he obviously could not quite believe official assurances that the fears were groundless and that he would be dispatched that very day to his own village, which was the promise that was given. His fears were justified. When Kurdish resistance crumbled following the abrupt withdrawal of the Shah of Iran's support in the wake of the March 1975 Algiers Accords with Iran, the army began to carry out the party policy, party headed by Saddam, of mass Kurdish deportations to the southwestern desert region of Iraq. Families of Kurds were bundled up in army trucks and transported to large, hastily improvised camps or to Arab villages west of the Euphrates, where they were settled in small groups. In areas designated for deportations by the Higher Committee for the Affairs of the North, presided over by Saddam Hussein, troops placed the villagers on trucks to be carried off at night in long caravans along sealed routes. Having reached their destinations, families were supplied with a tent and grouped in fives in so-called villages. Movement was prohibited except for official business. The men were assigned jobs at a fixed pay. Tell me how that's any different than the policy of South Africa that the world rose up against, of establishing zones and uprooting people and deporting the blacks into established limited areas. 85% of all those Kurds and their families who returned to Iraq, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. 85% of all those Kurds and their families who returned to Iraq on the strength of the general amnesty or who were driven out by the Shah's troops were sent to these desert camps. The Ba'ath tried to relocate all Kurds from the provinces of Diyala, Kirkuk, and Mosul, and stories began filtering out of soldiers serving in these camps who broke down in emotion at the sight of this proud mountain people scrambling in the dust after the water trucks, trundling along prescribed routes and doling out the precious liquid in officially prescribed amounts. The number of people affected with this policy will not be known until the files are opened. $300,000 to $350,000 are the best figures you're going to find, and that's probably low. That a crime of this magnitude is still shrouded in ambiguity speaks volumes on the nature of Saddam's regime. And that's only one of the racist annihilation genocide stunts that they pulled. The intellectual that was placed in the position to take Saddam's philosophy about secret reserves by the imperialists that might yet remain within the country as an enemy of the party, focused in on the Iranian and the Jewish schools and businesses, and build a list of names a priori considered to be concealed reserves potentially available to Zionist and American interest that might oppose the party and his monolithic surge to power. And these lists became the torture lists. Exactly what Hitler set out to do is being done and has been going on for some time, while the world, ignorant, sat back and let it happen. This couldn't have happened in Iran. It may, give them another 20 years, but for 20 years since 1968, the youth of the country have been turned against their parents and become the cultic, brainwashed worshipers of this madman. In his megalomaniac, messianic belief that he can lead the world to a pan-Arabic society that will do on a world scale of annihilation of those who oppose what he's done in Iraq. He's a criminal. His methods can only be compared to organized crime. He uses the terrorist weapon to hold civilized people captive. The trick of novels and movies where you grab the loved one and put a gun at their head or a knife at their throat and say to the civilized one, now lay your guns down or I'll shoot her or I'll kill her. And then always the hero does it, and in novels he finds a way to win. This ain't a novel. The only language they understand is, go ahead. And while you're doing it, I'll start with your gonads and just put holes in you all the way to the top. All the rationales that were given, and we may come to this, all the rationales that were given for atomic bombs being dropped on Japan was to compare that terrible event with the loss of life that would have occurred had the war continued and we sought to take Japan. Now, distance has made poor old Harry Truman look like a bad man as the peaceniks and inconsistent yellows after causes have had the time to spout off, while people whose sons and daughters were able to come home, who are now grandparents, their grandchildren now living and becoming grandparents, were able to come home, and their grandparents knew it because of Truman's tough willingness to put a stop to an abscess on the face of humanity. Now, I hear all of this talk about the environment being destroyed for decades to come, thousands of lives that will suffer, and the ecology of the entire Persian Gulf destroyed. And thousands upon thousands of fine young American men and women going to be sacrificed on their lice-ridden, scabby, brainwashed slaves of Saddam, dug in the desert. And a fate across the world of famine worldwide because of the threat of the smoke of oil wells that I think is exaggerated, but carry it to the end of their speech. There will lower temperatures around the world and erase crops in the spring and become the equivalent of nuclear winter in the spring, bringing famine worldwide. While we work and the news media begs to find out what are we doing to the Republican Guard, one good tactical nuclear weapon would wipe them out in a stroke. And I think America would agree that if he takes his next terrorist move, poison gas, bacteria, and nerve gas elements, and unleashes bacteria and disease on top of what he's now doing to the Gulf, a time for tactical nuclear surgical strikes has come. This scab, I repeat, on humanity has to be removed. That's a personal opinion about the Nuclear Act. I'm a historian. I've read, written papers, read papers on all the debates, pro and con, of the atom bombs dropped in Japan. Almost everyone listening to me tonight is a beneficiary of that tough, tragic choice made by Harry Truman. We have another madman that has to be stopped, whatever it takes. And if he isn't stopped soon, the poison gas of the media will so destroy the resolve and the will that Saddam will be left intact. And 10 years from now, and maybe less, the stage can be set for Antichrist. And don't take that 10 years as a fixed date. I could have just as easily said 20 or 50, sometime in the near distant future. Antichrist will come in. And he will come in the place where Saddam now reigns supreme, or Syria, or Jordan. Southern Turkey and Western Iran seem very remote. And this prototype of Antichrist had better be resisted with courage, fortitude, and resilience. And somebody had better let him know that the releasing of chemical weapons will be the last act he will ever perform on this earth. He and his people. We should be willing to turn it to a wasteland. As far as I'm concerned, one American soldier in the south of Iraq and Kuwait, on the borders in Saudi Arabia, one American soldier boy is worth more than that whole nation of Iraq. And I'm a man of God. So get on the telephone. I think you need to call the Israeli consulate here in Los Angeles and tell them to listen to me and tell them the times we're on. They probably need some encouragement. Listen to the rest of the news. The message is coming in. Reveal the media is already up to it. A couple of networks have already said that they're not sure whether the Iraqis turn the spigots and let the oil out, or whether the U.S. caused it by their bombing. And there is a so-called rumor being denied that two of Saddam's military leaders were executed because he didn't like the way they were performing. What's new about that? In 1971, Saddam Hussein expressed the hope that, quote, with our party methods, there is no chance for anyone who disagrees with us to jump on a couple of tanks and overthrow the government. These methods have gone. You have the clear reason why the PLO second man was assassinated. He had the temerity to say Saddam shouldn't have gone into Kuwait. And now he's dead. In a rare 1982 interview granted to the West German journal Stern, this is what Saddam had to say. Stern, it is known that Your Excellency is not satisfied with the Iraqi military command. Is it true that in the recent period 300 high-ranking military officers have been executed? Hussein, no, However, two divisional commanders and the commander of a mechanized unit were executed. This is something very normal in all wars. Stern, for what reason? Hussein, they did not undertake their responsibilities in the battle for Muhammara. Before the fall of Muhammara, rumors spread among Iraqis of massive purges among officers involved in the first setbacks. One story concerns an officer who gave the order for a tactical retreat from some position because he could not stomach mowing down waves of fanatical teenage revolutionary guards. The man was hauled up before Saddam Hussein, who pulled out his revolver and shot him dead on the spot, in front of an audience, of course. Now, where are the people who marched in the streets, quite rightly, to isolate and characterize South Africa as the demon possessed of the world? Where are they now? When another one, I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it with South Africa, I'm saying, why aren't they doing it for what Saddam did to the Kurds? Same thing. You better believe, if there has ever been any white prejudice toward the black people, it's nothing to match Saddam Hussein's non-Arab enmity. He doesn't share your viewpoint of the empathy of people of color. He'd annihilate the blacks the way he did the Kurds, if any of you were there. The way he did the Jews. Only difference between Saddam Hussein and Hitler, his hatred of the Jews is even greater than Hitler's. And there are Jews living in that land that date all the way back to Nebuchadnezzar. Only 50,000 of the 650,000 who were settled there came back to Jerusalem. And people in Iraq who loved Iraq before Saddam and the Ba'ath Party, the same way that there are Arabs in this land who love America. At least the president spoke out today in this land to avoid a repeat of what happened when the Japanese were abused in the First World War because of the mere fact that they were Japanese. And our president spoke pretty strongly about protecting their rights as citizens, even if they disagreed with his decision about the war. And even if they faced some of the same problems that Germans and Japanese faced in the Second World War, and Germans in both the First and Second World War, who had loved ones and family on the other side, under the control of that madman Hitler in the Second World War, and the warlords and emperor worship of Japan, you won't find that kind of sympathy coming from Saddam. Anyone not Arab, brainwashed and accepting his party in the fascist view that there is revealed to a select elite that which is best for the whole, is annihilated. And in a gesture to world opinion, to grant amnesty to the Kurds to return to their land, as we saw in the previous half hour, he then shuttled them away from their historic region, transplanted, deported, and made to live in inhumane, select ghettos in the desert, surrounded by those of the party that could keep them in control or annihilate them, making them beggars for water in that desert land. Where are the marchers? Where are the civil rights proclaimers who cannot see that this indeed is a holy war, with holiness on our side? I'm sick of the media. Go on telephone. Hope you are. Well, this madman should be referred to with disrespect every time he's mentioned. The bunker hunker. And the media should be referred to as sadomizers who've been practicing sadomy on us every day and every night, attempting to sadomize us. They'd learn a new language, these sadomizing scuds. Sadomizers. It's a good name for them. Saddam Hussein put Dr. Fadil al-Barak, a professor, intellectual, in the place of his half-brother in the party security organization, Saddam, who teaches children to turn against their parents, and whose first murder was one of his relatives at the behest of his uncle. And Dr. Barak wrote a book on Jewish and Iranian schools in Iraq, published in 1984. The idea for the book, Barak says, originated in a 1979 speech by Saddam Hussein that drew attention to the social and political means of sabotage practiced by evil expansionist forces inside Iraq. Saddam singled out education as the preferred arena where those that are not in favor of his party are engaging in mental and spiritual enslavement of Iraqi youth by forces that included Iranian and Jewish schools in Iraq. This study by Barak takes the position that Jewish and Iranian schools were conceived to achieve long-range political goals. In the case of Iraqi Jewry, Zionist sources prove that since the 7th century B.C., the yearning for the land of Zion was the principal force which suffused the soul, even for every Iraqi Jew in every historical period, leading them to side with the British during the various stages of their presence in Iraq. This is the anti-Jewish broad brush that he paints. No matter whether true or false, this book with the blessing of Saddam on it states, and once having stated it, it becomes a fact. All else, alternative opinions become error. That all Jews, by virtue of being Jew, since the 7th century, when the Islamic faith began, by the way, and conveniently, are primarily dominated with a yearning for the land of Zion. He then moves to the more modern period and credits to the Jew the protocols of the elders of Zion, which is a forgery of the Tsarist police in Russia. The Freemasonry, he says, was a crucial link between the ambitions of the world Zionist leadership, British imperialism, and the activities of local Iraqi Jews in the service of this foreign triumvirate. Freemasonry itself, he claimed, was led by the same elders who had signed the Zionist protocols in Basel, Switzerland. And then every little Jewish school in Iraq, he says, is the result of this conspiracy to use education in the form of false ideas as the principal means by which to spread the conspiracy against Iraq. Barak's secret police sources claim to show that on the road to executing the Zionist plan for the occupation of Palestine, Iraqi Jewish schools placed great and vigorous attention on education and military and espionage affairs. Now, Barak heads the secret police unit appointed by Saddam, for whom all history merely serves the contextual backdrop to his real job. History, butchered as I've quickly jumped along with its main theme, takes up a mere 10% of his nearly 300-page book. What, then, is the main purpose of this book? Fundamentally, Barak is in the business of naming people and making lists. He provides personal information in written or tabular form on teachers, administrators, and employees in Iranian schools in Iraq. 553 names accompanied by all personal particulars. A discussion attempting to establish the foreign origin of these people. He then lists every Jewish and Iranian school since Ottoman times, with a history of each, including numbers of graduates in various years, the names of the benefactors or trustees of these schools, the names of Jews accused of terrorism or spying for Zionism. Notice accused, no evidence, just accused. And if they're a benefactor or a trustee, that makes them suspicious. The names of individuals who crossed the Iranian border generations ago and illegitimately obtained Iraqi nationality for the express purpose, he maintains, of occupying key positions of influence in government, commerce, and the opposition. He lists the property holdings of these whom he calls economic saboteurs, their role in financing the fundamentalist Dawa party in recent years that for a time opposed Saddam's Ba'ath party, a discussion of on how 140 people of Iranian origin who had infiltrated the central bank and other financial institutions went about sabotaging the economy, the number of Jewish and Iranian merchants in different periods, classified by type of merchandise, locale, and influence on the economy, what he calls the conspiracy that led Jewish merchants to sell out to Iranian merchants in the early 1950s in Iraq, the names and activities of Zionist and Iranian secret societies, a table listing personal information on 245 Jewish members of the Communist Party, and so on. And the names belong to families in Iraq, not individuals. Hence, keep in mind that the numbers of people implicated by such a book is far greater than the 1,000 or so fully identified individuals. Moreover, when Barak fixes a number, for example, he says there were 3,245 Iranian merchants in Baghdad alone in 1970, one must assume the existence of files on 3,245 families, all of whose members are deemed part of a much larger community of fifth columnists. Barak himself emphasizes that fifth columnists place their children and other relations in strategic locations where they could do the most damage. Racism. I don't know how many of you either studied history or lived at a time when the records of Hitler's party began to prepare the lists of those that had the slightest Jewish connection. I told you, the ideologue of the Ba'ath Party, who was responsible for Saddam's rise by recommending him to head the internal security force that became his power base and built the party in its present image, which worships him. That ideologue took Hitler Germany as his primary model. And what you have in Iraq is that dream of another Reich with a racist and religious marriage. It's terrible. Get on telephone. Lyle, Illinois. Well, it talks about a network reporter talking about plans to kill Saddam and told what we're looking for, a certain signature or phrase in Arabic that tells where Saddam is, a certain change in traffic. They can say that the Iraqi intelligence is so great they would know it anyway, baloney. I didn't appreciate the news today. I think they're going to have scuds in their face, but scuds all over their face. But they were saying that we have only 500 Patriot missiles, and Saddam has between 300 and 3,000 scuds, so he may win the numbers war. I think it was treasonous for him to say we had only 500 Patriot missiles, even though I would make you a bet it's not true. And they'll get, as I said, scud all over their face. They're traitors. People are calling me and saying how mad you get when you watch the TV. Well, call a news station. Let your voice be heard. Wes Covina, I'm a 12-year-old boy, and the media makes Saddam appear less evil than he is. And Doc is telling it like it really is. I understand one of the networks showed, quote, the other side of Saddam Hussein, showed him swimming in a pool with some kids. I wonder what he really did when they turned the camera off. He's an evil man. Wichita, Kansas. I was in Europe when Hitler's troops burned my barn with 90 people in it and they machine gunned down the ones running out. Yeah, we've got to get this guy Saddam out. Can't believe we've let this man get so far, especially when we were taught in history classes that the world could never let this happen again. You've got some legislators, too. that are belittling the blacks and the browns in service. The blacks and the browns that are over there are the heroes of their race. They need to be treated that way. It's their own people that are selling them out. The media never once brings up the fact there's a volunteer army. This is not a draft. This is a volunteer army. The ones on the other side, they retreat, get shot. They're such great ground warriors because they get killed either direction. No wonder they shoot straight up so often. You know, in the 60 war, the war in the 60s, Israel against various neighboring groups, Saddam participated half-heartedly. He sent a few troops in to help Syria. And during the 6 days fighting, because it was the famous Six-Day War, there were 10 soldiers killed and about 30 wounded. That was Iraq's contribution. But the brainwashing that Saddam had done on the Iraqi people with his messianic pan-Arab I lead you to victory routine had to have an explanation. They therefore used it as another means of rooting out anyone that he wanted out of Iran by taking the position, resurrecting the old idea of fifth columnists as the cause for the loss. That is, patience and mercy and not rooting these out was the cause of their loss. As they are now parading and the media is parroting, thousands of casualties in Israel, thousands of casualties in Arabia. The Americans have now caused the oil spill. They turn the spigots and then blame us. Thousands of planes will be shot down. I mean, before this war is over, they will shoot down more planes than we've had in the last 10 years. And their people will believe it. No opposition papers in Jordan. Just day after day, one message, brainwashing the people. After the Six-Day War, to explain their defeat, the modest numbers of dead suddenly is projected up into the ghosts of tens of thousands of Egyptian, Syrian, Jordanian, and Palestinian casualties, the Israeli occupation of the territories, the collapse of whole armies, and the destruction of equipment was sold to the Iraqi population as the responsibility of Iraq's tiny Jewish community, whose near total withdrawal from all facets of public life dated back to the 1940s. But he was able to convince the Iraqi populace that the loss of the Six-Day War and tens of thousands of slain of all Arab nations and all the other things just read, caused by Iraqi Jewry. Thus, Iraqi Jewry became social pariahs. Property transactions and liquid assets were frozen. Contracts, government scholarships, and new jobs were canceled. Quotas and other restrictions were imposed on the number of Jews accepted in Iraqi universities. In less than a year, some 100 Jews were jailed, of whom about 40 were intermittently released. And within days, the Ba'ath Party demonstrated their mastery of the art of manipulating symbols, which they're doing through the media today, to confer a ghoulish realism to their general ideological assertions. The offices of the Iraqi branch of the Coca-Cola Company were raided, and the Muslim president owner and his Muslim manager taken away as tools of imperialism and fronts for the fifth column that had caused them to lose. I mean, what symbolizes imperialist presence better than its most widely known commodity, Coca-Cola? Some weeks later, the mutilated corpse of the president and an ex-general manager driven insane were returned to their families. Now, what levels of meaning had been instilled in each innocent sip taken from the soon-to-be nationalized bottle of Coke? While the country pondered the terrifying sweep of this kind of evocation, which bound up people's rationality to their deepest fears, Jews were being picked up in ones and twos along with former ministers, other industrialists, army officers, intellectuals, some physicians, and countless members of the independent profession. On October 9, 1968, the government announced that a major Zionist spy ring had been broken up in Basra. 17 Jews were flown to a military base in Baghdad, taken from there to a party interrogation center. Arrests mounted through November, and on the 25th of the month, Iraqi artillery units stationed in Jordan opened up in their latest valiant contribution to the war of attrition against Israel. On December 4, 1968, an Israeli air attack resulted in 16 dead and 30 wounded. Rumor had it that these official figures were grossly underestimated. The following day, a large party-organized demonstration started out from Liberation Square toward the presidential palace. Coffins of soldiers were carried, and a crowd of some 40,000 people headed by party and government officials and a sizable contingent of Palestinian guerrillas. President Ahmad Hassan al-Bakr, the president of the time, Saddam was head of the security under him, addressed the crowd in a two-hour harangue carried live on Iraqi television. At the same time we face growing pressure and repeated attacks on our heroic army, we face treacherous movements of a rabble of fifth columnists and the new supporters of America and Israel. Now that's 30 years ago. The whole generation we're facing has been fed this diet. We weren't even involved in that war. But listen, we face treacherous movements of a rabble of fifth columnists and the new supporters of America and Israel. They're hiding behind fronts and slogans which the people have seen through and exposed. These suspected and suspicious movements are undertaking the duties assigned to them and executing their role in the American conspiracy. They aim to create malicious rumor and disturbances employed for this end, killings, sabotage, and undertaking operations behind the front lines of our heroic army with the intention of keeping us preoccupied from the great battle with the Zionist enemy. We shall strike mercilessly with a fist of steel at those exploiters and fifth columnists, the handmaidens of imperialism and Zionism. Ever so often, Bakr cried out to the crowd, "What do you want?" The answer would thunder back, "Death to the spies, execution of the spies, all the spies without delay." They hung them. The public squares, thousands gathered around to salivate. And when our Secretary of State was meeting this Tariq Aziz, who was saying that our president's letter to his criminal president, though he didn't say criminal, didn't show enough dignity. And while the press fawned on this thug and compatriot of Saddam in his murderous years. He was treated with respect given to diplomats of negotiation. Tariq Aziz, commenting on this public hanging, to be frank, the people, after their experience since the 40s and up to the 68 revolution, doubted the intention and capability of any regime to eradicate the espionage networks. They believed that any campaign of this kind would be a fiction which would end in a kind of compromise. They even suspected that the tentacles of these networks extended to the highest levels of any Iraqi government. So the revolution set out to eradicate the networks ruthlessly, and it was decided to execute the condemned men in public. One should not think that the hundreds of thousands of people who enjoyed going out to look at the hanged bodies are barbaric or primitive. This would be an injustice and also a false impression. That event was a monument of confidence staged by the revolution in the most important square in Baghdad to prove to the people that what had been impossible in the past was now a fact that could speak for itself. Namely, they were all powerful. And who were the spies and saboteurs? Falsely accused Jews and anyone that they could brand with Zionism or Americanism, whether they had any connections or not, in the further attempt at genocide to eliminate all except the brainwashed children of the party who worshipped Saddam Hussein. Fascism was studied by me as I did my doctorate at Stanford University. I was working on a scholarship, not yet given. I remember my first paper to Larry Thomas was a discussion, a critique of fascism. Still remember what he said. Best critique of fascism I've read in 10 years. I never dreamed, as I wrote that critique and studied fascism as an evil philosophy, that an opportunity would ever again appear in this world for fascism to take a hold on a people's mind and produce a brainwashed, insane crowd under a madman as Hitler had done. But it's on us in Saddam Hussein, and it has to be eradicated. Now stand up and be counted and use your telephones.